have anything to back this up, but I am just going to assume that the problem of home theft is going to be exacerbated because people cannot get access to things like painkillers through other legal means. And I wanted to say happy Pharmacist Day, too, by the way, with the capital. Any pharmacists here? Okay. Had a nice time talking with them. In the area of healthcare waste, this bill does not actually have language in it that addresses the problem of source reduction. I do have a testifier who can talk about some of the measures that have been taken in Minnesota and places like long-term care facilities to save money and to reduce prescription drug waste. But no one has an exact figure, but the decimal point people are telling me is in the billions of dollars of prescription drugs that are prescribed and paid for, often with public dollars through Medicare and Medicaid, and then they're never used. You'll hear from someone from the Minnesota Technical Assistance Project that an average nursing home patient has several hundred dollars of unused drugs aggregated per year. Interestingly enough, in the stakeholder meetings we had, the Minnesota Department of Health said we like the concept of this bill. The bill has stuff about not flushing stuff into the sewer system. And they said we like that, but look at these state rules that we've had on the books for years that said healthcare facilities must flush drugs down the toilet. And at that meeting was also someone from the Pollution Control Agency who said, well, we treat this material as hazardous, so you're saying that we're requiring in your rules that we flush hazardous waste down the toilet. And the answer was yes. And there was kind of an aha moment that maybe we are working at cross purposes. And as Catherine Zimmer will tell us, source reduction strategies can actually save us money in the public sector. Here's what's in House File 1217. At its core is a product stewardship system for unused drugs. This is mirrored very similar to what was done in 2007 by this body for electronic waste management, where we asked producers to play a key role in financing the, in that case, recycling of electronics waste. In this bill, it would be the destruction of these pharmaceuticals. It's permissive language, so it allows, in this bill it says counties, although it sounds like we should amend it to say local government units later, but local government can decide whether to participate and then seek reimbursement for their work. And we have some testifiers who will talk about some of the collection models that are out there. But here's a 10,000 foot look level. Right now, we have a couple of examples where law enforcement agencies on their own with authority from the Drug Enforcement Agency in Washington have the ability to collect on an ongoing basis prescription drugs. Chisago County will be testifying about their successful program. The city of Northfield, or maybe Rice County, are doing that as well. Another model is a county cleanup day event. This is where you might take your paint and your tires and your motor oil in. But in this case, you'd actually go in and drop off your drugs, and the Western Lake Superior Sanitary District will be testifying about their system. And in that case, you have to have law enforcement present because of DEA requirements. You just can't be handling controlled substances for fun. You have to have somebody who's qualified to take custody of the material. County-run collection days, that's actually been used in Mankato and Blue Earth County, where a willing pharmacy was willing to host a collection event for residential users of prescription drugs, and people would bring their drugs in. Environmental Services in Blue Earth County organized it, and sheriff's deputies were present to oversee the collection of the controlled substances. The bill does allow the possibility for industry-led collection as long as it's compliant with federal law. So, you know, with the electronic waste model, the beauty of that was that the private sector worked with the private sector and there was very little government interaction, which is actually what we wanted. The product stewardship model is really about producers playing a role in the safe handling of material. So, for example, electronics manufacturers will contract with a private recycler such as Waste Management or Allied Waste to collect the material, and then it's recycled or destroyed depending on what's needed. In this case, we are dealing with materials that are not something you want to leave lying around, where we do have to comply with federal drug law. So it does require some public sector participation where you have law enforcement present anytime you're collecting the material. But if industry can figure out a better way to do this at a cheaper cost, since they would be financially responsible, that's actually the direction we ought to be looking, but they would contract, for example, local law enforcement to collect the material. But House Research and I worked with the bill to make sure it's flexible so that other models can emerge as long as they're in compliance with federal law. The bill also prohibits healthcare facilities from flushing drugs into the sewer system. That seemed to be the issue that got the greatest consensus, although I think you may have a letter from some long-term care folks with some technical issues on that part. But my thinking here is that if we know, even if not all endocrine disruptors come from unused prescription drugs, I think we have a duty as citizens to do no harm and not to add more step when we could be putting it somewhere else. This bill, thanks to the drafting assistance of the Board of Pharmacy and the Pollution Control Agency, explicitly allows law enforcement to possess unused drugs as well as hazardous waste facilities and transporters. Right now, state law only allows pharmacists to possess legend drugs or prescription drugs. Federal law allows law enforcement to also collect it, but state law does not say that. And technically, for the folks who are hauling the waste material, according to state law now, they actually could be pulled over and busted for possession of controlled substances because of the way the law is written, which seems a little odd. All activities must comply with state and federal law. There's lots of intersecting moving parts in federal law. Minnesota, or the U.S. Department of Transportation, EPA, and the Drug Enforcement Agency. I get questions about what the current final destination of the waste is. Currently, I guess you'd call it the best available technology is hazardous waste incineration. The closest permitted hazardous waste incinerator that drugs can go to right now is in Sauget, Illinois, opposite St. Louis, Missouri. There is a 3M facility here in Minnesota, but is not currently permitted to take waste outside of their company. Although there is some debate going on among some of the stakeholders about whether some of the drugs can be destroyed through municipal solid waste combustion, which we have a lot of those facilities, and if we can figure out a way to do that, and the language here pretty much says whatever the pollution control says is okay, then we can use that technology, and that would actually be much cheaper. I've got a lot of confusion from some people about what the bill does and doesn't do, and I just want to make very clear what that is. This does not require retail take-back. If a retailer, such as a pharmacy or anybody really, wants to host a collection, as long as they're in compliance with federal law, whoever their partners are, then that would be just fine. This bill also does not require local governments to participate. So a county, perhaps a city, if we change the language, can take the initiative, as several counties who are presenting today have, and their costs would be reimbursed if they choose to participate. So if a county doesn't want to do it, then they don't have to do it. It does not require pharmaceutical companies to be the collectors of unused drugs. The original version of the bill had language that I think was interpreted in that way. And I just want to be clear that nobody can handle the material unless it's in compliance with federal law. But if a producer did set up their own system under this, and they would actually not have to pay any sort of fees to register for the program, they could do that. But they're not required to actually be the collectors. Some people have said that this bill will open the floodgates to greater prescription drug abuse because it will be a target for diversion, that if you collect the materials that in one place, that it will be a target for criminals to swipe the controlled substances and essentially market it. I would just politely disagree, because right now we're finding out the ways people are getting access to prescription drugs right now is from our homes in many cases. And keeping your stuff in your house now is posing almost as big a risk as transporting the material somewhere else for destruction. And as I say, once you have a collection where it's in compliance with federal law, law enforcement has to be present and they have custody of the material. And I also want to be clear that this bill does not solve all of the endocrine disruptor problem. Undigested drugs that we consume also contribute to that, and that ends up in the sewer system. I'll let you use your imagination on how that works. So I don't want you to give you the impression that we're going to solve everything, but this collection model is a model. And as we think of all the other substances that we're trying to keep out of there, we may learn from this on ways to deal with those. I've also been told that this bill might make Minnesota an island, that it will restrict access to prescription drugs or lower cost prescription drugs because people would refuse to sell here because of the cost of the program. And I don't believe it. Maybe someone can tell me otherwise. I have some frequently asked questions that I think I had as a handout. It was sort of keep to myself, but as I find people have certain conceptions about the bill, I thought it was important for everybody to have it. Currently, the guidance that the pharmaceutical industry has for getting rid of unused pharmaceutical waste is to throw it away, and in particular to put it into something like a plastic bag and with something that's unpalatable like coffee grounds, so no one will want to steal it out of your garbage. Suggesting that material will be encapsulated in our modern engineered landfills. And we're finding from Maine that actually that's not the case. In a modern engineered landfill, these materials are ending up in the leachate, which comes down to the bottom as rainwater makes its way through. And there's a modern plumbing system which takes that leachate out. And the material just goes to sewage treatment anyway, which is the same place that you would go if you flushed it. In Maine, trying to find whether this is actually the case or not, did the testing and found there are substances coming out in the leachate. Can't the public sector do it? I mean, the public sector is doing it. You could say that environmental protection is a key environment or a key public duty. And we'll have one testifier speak about the concept of product stewardship and how we're trying to actually incorporate the cost of the externality of environmental protection in the cost of products, so that it's actually cheaper that way, rather than apply taxation, fees, and the like to actually clean up stuff later. This is the island issue. I'll skip that. Promoting diversion, I talked about that. The risk of really doing nothing, I think, is equally high, if not higher. The question came, do we incinerate our garbage anyway? Minnesota has a high number of waste energy facilities. And so the idea is if you sent your garbage there, then the stuff would be burned up there. Sort of. Not all municipal waste, solid waste incineration facilities are the same in terms of their combustion technology. But it is almost impossible, particularly in the metro, to know on any given day where your waste is going. My waste at my house could be going to Eau Claire, Wisconsin. It could be going to Elk River. It could be going to Newport in a variety of facilities. Isn't this going to be really expensive? The fiscal notes that have been prepared by state agencies in Maine and Washington have showed that the total cost of statewide collection there under very similar legislation is all less than $1 million, which would be borne by the pharmaceutical companies. That's why this bill is going to finance, and this bill has many stops. It has to go to health care, public safety because of the controlled substance issue, civil justice, and then to finance. So that's actually where we'll find out that information. But in comparison to the cost of doing nothing, which is the increased amount of poisonings and wastewater treatment, it's considerably cheaper. The question is, if most of the stuff we are dealing with pharmaceuticals and wastewater is coming from our bodies, shouldn't we deal with this at wastewater treatment plants? And the folks at the League of Minnesota Cities tell me that the cost of doing that, to use the latest technology like hydroxyl radical and ozonation with carbon infiltration, would be in the hundreds of millions to billions of dollars in Minnesota compared to less than $1 million for a source reduction program with this program. Cheaper than an alternatives. This is a little sneak in my part, okay, but a prominent Minnesotan said the number one priority on environmental protection has to be to make sure that we don't pollute the lakes or the water to start with, because cleaning something up is exponentially more expensive than actually preventing it. And I appreciate that Representative Seifert said that at a recent debate. I think he's right. Mr. Chair, that's the bill. I thought that testifiers can come, and my guess is the anti-folks will do their thing, and then I'd have wrap-up comments at the end.
Sure. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Gardner. And if there are no questions at this point, we can move on to the testimony of those in favor. Seeing no questions, the first one on the list, Ms. Lisa, tell me if I'm pronouncing this correctly, Thibodeau. Thank you. From Chisago County. Oh, and also Sergeant Carl Schreck, also from Chisago County. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for asking.
Yes, and if you could state your name for the record, please, before you begin.
My name is Lisa Thibodeau, and I'm the Solid Waste Administrator for Chisago County. And we've had an ongoing unwanted medication disposal program for a little over 2 years now. And the program works in a partnership between our Environmental Services Department, our Household Hazardous Waste Facility, and our Sheriff's Department. And we originally started the program because, as Paul mentioned, all the water pollution issues and endocrine disruption of drugs that are polluting the water. But the sheriff brought along his arguments about cutting down on accidental poisonings and illegal drug use, which, as you all know, are huge problems now. And I would say our county saw the need for this service and this program long before we started actually collecting. We would get calls from people calling our household hazardous waste facility saying, what can I do? I got all these drugs, or my mom passed away. And we'd tell them, don't flush it, but we can't take it at this time. Just hang on to them. We'll come up with a solution, which we did in October of 2007. And you'd be surprised at how many people actually did save the drugs and brought them into us. And our program is really simple. We collected drugs at two anonymous drop boxes. We got one at the Sheriff's Department at the southern end of the county, and Carl worked out a deal with the North Branch Police Department at the northern part of the county. The sheriff does all the collecting. We pay the bills. And the drugs are ultimately disposed of at that Sauget, Illinois, Hazways facility. And I wanted to tell you, our program doesn't cost a lot. We figured that a county of our size, we have about 50,000 people. That costs about $5,000 a year, give or take. That includes about $1,000 for the drop box, miscellaneous supplies. We figure about $1,000 staff time. That's about 40 hours at $25 an hour. And then about $3,000 in disposal costs. So kind of the facts of our program, we've been running it for a little over 2 years. We've shipped out 1,400 pounds of unwanted drugs for incineration. Doesn't sound like a whole lot, but you know, each pill doesn't weigh very much, so that's a lot of drugs. Carl tells me he's got another 500 pounds sitting in the evidence room, so that's about a ton of drugs over 2 years that we've kept out of the water. About 5% of those turned out to be controlled substances. Over the 2 years, our total haz waste incineration costs were in about $5,000. And I'm sure Carl can speak to the street value of all those drugs. But I'll just wrap up by saying that over time, you know, the use of our drop boxes has increased exponentially. So people do, you know, it's a proven fact that people need an environmentally and socially responsible way of getting rid of these drugs. And the tax dollars pick up the whole tab right now in our county. The taxpayers are picking up the tab for this. And we just feel that the manufacturers need to share in some of the responsibility paying for the disposal of these drugs. I'll turn it over to Carl now.
My name is Carl Schreck. I'm with Chisago County Sheriff's Office. And like Lisa said, we started out on an environmental issue. And then we turned over to how many kids are actually dying from prescription medications, and then the huge problems with theft. Criminal prosecution of a case like that's huge by the time from front to back. Right now, we've disposed of over $500,000 worth of street-level drugs, which are the drugs of choice that the youth of Minnesota and the United States are using. Our program takes me about 10 minutes a week. And if we can't afford 10 minutes a week to keep this out of the groundwater and also keep the drugs away from the kids, it's a really low-cost program. This bill is going to really clean up a lot of the language, make it easier. I'm actually having a meeting with Stearns County tomorrow morning. They're going to start a program. Northfield modeled their program after ours. The problem has been all of the knots that Representative Gardner talked about, where it just gets very confusing. And right now we've got a really workable program. I think we can do it at a very low cost. And as this program goes on, I get to go speak all over. I've talked to a lot of different counties and cities. And I'll say the same thing to this room. Just think about your own house. How many drugs are in your house right now? Where are they at? And one of the things law enforcement is finding, and I'm here to speak on behalf of the sheriff for our county, and as I've talked to other law enforcement agencies, one of the things that we're finding is when younger people are going in and doing burglaries, they're not taking your TV or your guns. They're not taking your jewelry. They're taking the drugs because the street value of this stuff is incredible. and your chance of getting caught is pretty slim. And the other thing that they're doing, and as it was referred to, is somebody wants this stuff, they just stop at somebody's house to visit. I'm going to use your bathroom. They go to the next to the kitchen sink. And they're not taking the whole bottle. They're taking a little bit because they don't get caught. And then they go to the next person's house and the next person's house. Well, then by the time law enforcement gets in and does an investigation on these people, it's very time-consuming, lengthy. People are going to jail because it's such easy access. And this bill is going to help removal out of that. Not a Chisago County. Yeah, we're taking a lot of this stuff. The availability is just less. And we're not saying it's going to stop it, but we've made it less available. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Sergeant. And if I could remind people to turn off their cell phones, we are getting a little bit of feedback here. So are there any questions for the Sergeant or Representative McNamara?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe my question is probably for both testifiers. It sounds like you mentioned you got a real workable program up there and it's going real well at the county level. I'm trying to imagine why you think that if we got a bunch of state agencies involved and the manufacturers all involved and put up this big structure and bureaucracy, that it's going to be better.
Sergeant?
I'll speak to that. When we started this issue, I thought, well, this piece of cake. It's real simple. It's like this issue is common sense. The problem is right now we have a ton of government red tape involved. There's all kinds of laws, rules, and regulations. What this bill is going to do is going to take and untie a lot of those knots and make it so that it's just cleaner language, it's easier, and so that we can expand. And we're not saying we have the perfect model. We're saying we have a model that's working in our county, but hopefully somebody's even got a better plan out there as we put more heads together. The problem is with some of the language that's there between federal law, state law, every time we would start a process to start do a collection in our county, we would run into a roadblock because somebody would throw some other law out there, and what we would have to do is find the loophole to get through it. And what we're doing is we're using law enforcement. This is a public safety community policing effort. We're looking at the public interest to keep our water cleaner and our children safer. But to look at some of this, one law will say I can't do it, then I have to find two other laws that say I can. Then I have to find case law that will go back and forth. And what this bill is going to do is going to clean that up. And as I've spoken to places all over the United States, actually, I have North Carolina, Florida, where people want to model after us, the problem becomes some of the language, and that's what this bill is going to do.
Thank you. And Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question to the sergeant. You say you have a couple of drop boxes in your county. Are these boxes monitored, or how do you maintain that they don't get dipped into or stolen from those drop boxes themselves?
And that's Sergeant one of the Shrek. Things we looked at very carefully, and ours are very secure because I don't think anybody's going to break into the sheriff's office. They are a secure steel box that's built on an interior wall. It's kind of like if you picture a mailbox. But it's the major portion is inside of our office on an interior wall. Same thing at the North Branch Police Department. There's two people that have access to it, myself and the chief deputy from the department, in case I can't be there. There's video cameras. It's a really secure location.
And you can't reach.
You can't reach in. It's a secure box. It's like a mailbox. And what I do is when that box starts to get full, I empty it out and I store it in our evidence room. And I don't know of any evidence room that's been broken into. That I'm all under surveillance. Every time I go back there, my key card is swiped. Everybody knows when I've been there, how long I've been there, and what I've done, and I monitor it the entire time. And it's actually left us with a better tracking system to keep better control of where it's going. We request that people can take their name off the prescription, but we ask that they leave the name of the drug on. But we ask them to take their names off. And it's a really secure way to do it. And we were just really afraid if we tried to open something at, say, a household hazardous waste facility at this time, there's no security there.
Right.
We're here, we're manned 24 hours a day. There's always law enforcement present, so it's just a safe way to do it.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Junkie.
Thank you. I just have one question regarding the collection and labeling of what you get in your program now. Do you this requires you to identify the material and then weigh it and record the amount by weight of the material you get in, and then identify and weigh and report the controlled substances collected there, and on and on and on. Do you do all that now?
Sergeant Schreck.
We do. We actually have a company that comes in. They're incredibly fast. The company comes in and sorts. It's chemists. And like I say, it just takes me about 10 minutes a week to empty out my box, both boxes. And then when I have a large enough volume to make it worthwhile to ship it, the company comes in, they sort through the drugs, and they give me a weight. They give me a manifest. They give me documentation for us to be able to destroy the drugs.
And I would say that that's the same system we use to dispose of our household hazardous waste that we take in. It's the same system.
So you don't mind doing that?
No, we're already doing it.
And I want to get that on the record. Because in our waste pesticide collection, I've got some counties that are screaming bloody murder about recording an ounce of pesticide that has a label on it when it comes in. So I just want to get on the record that I guess counties are okay to do recording on stuff when they collect it. So I want that on the record for my future. We may be talking about that over my ag committee.
And I can address this. The last shipment we made, which was 600 pounds of drugs, it took them 3 hours to sort through it and give me a complete and detailed manifest. I can share it with anybody. I keep records. I give records to Lisa, and we have a really accurate.
And we need that manifest to ship the drugs per DOT rules, so we're doing it already.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sergeant, what you mentioned, you think this contributes to the public safety, and I'm curious. You know, I guess I understand the traditional role of a police department to be out there fighting crime and in some cases preventing crime. You know, I guess the argument could be made if you're going to contribute to the public safety, you could shovel sidewalks for people. You could do all kinds of activities that would make things safer for people. What type of evidence do you have to suggest that you're actually contributing to this public safety and that this isn't an act of futility?
Sergeant Schreck.
Well, I'm going to tell you this. Part of my job as a police officer is to educate our youth and people about dangers of drugs. Actually, for what we're doing right now, in the speeches that I give and when I talk to other counties about our program and why I think it's worthwhile, I'm just kind of a common sense plain guy, and I'm going to tell you right now, the less drugs we put down the drain, the less drugs that are going to be there. The less drugs that I contaminate my water with, I think that's a public safety issue, and no one will convince me any different of that. That's just my personal opinion. As far as keeping drugs away from kids, we have educated people within our community between everything from mailings, articles, interviews on the radio, and me going out and doing personal speaking engagements where we're removing drugs from medicine cabinets, from grandpa and grandma's house, and we're making people aware. And I think the biggest thing that hit home is about 2 weeks ago, I was at church with my kids for a confirmation class, and they had a speaker come in and talk about the dangers of drugs. And she started talking about our program to these kids and to the parents about here's a place where we can get rid of this. It's not sitting on a shelf. It's not available. And we're not going to have as many accidental poisoning just because there's less there. And I guess that's the evidence that I'm going to go with from 25 years of being a peace officer. I've given a lot of talks, everything from wear your seatbelt, drive slow, don't drink and drive. This is just another message that, you know, let's get rid of these drugs and not have them available.
And Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Sergeant. Do you know of one single person in your county whose life you've saved because of this program?
Sergeant Schreck.
No, I couldn't give you a name. But thank you. I honestly think this is probably the most important thing I've done since I've been a peace officer.
And Sergeant Schreck, maybe another question. Do you know of anybody that did die because of overdose of drugs from prescription medicines?
I know of a lot of them, and I've actually worked with a couple of groups. One of them is Partnership for Change out of Hennepin County, where they've been keeping records, and it's unbelievable the number of poisonings with youth. And a lot of them are not accidental poisoning. It's because they're abusing prescription medication. And actually, we talked about it this morning. There was two individuals from the same family. It was a father and a daughter that both died. They were about a year apart, about a mile from our sheriff's office, and both of them died from overdoses of oxycodone.
Okay, thank you. Any other? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really want to give you guys credit. It seems like you've got some things figured out here, and I'm just trying to, I want to be sure I got it right. Sergeant, did you say the county spent about $5,000 total so far in about 2 years of running the program, and it was about 1,400 pounds collected?
Ms. Thibodeau.
We figured that on average it would cost a county of our size about $5,000 per year to operate the program. The $5,000 in incineration cost was specifically to hire the hazardous waste transporter to transport our drugs to the incinerator down in Sauget. So the $5,000 was what we paid for the 2 years' worth of incineration. And we collected 1,400 pounds of drugs over that two-year period.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Thibodeau, how much did you say again was the total? You had some staff time and some other cost factors in there.
You want to take that?
Actually, when we figured out our program, we took a one-year time span, and at that point in time, we started out relatively slowly because we didn't know what we were getting ourselves into, and it was about 1,400 pounds worth of drugs. And in that cost was even a trip for me to go to Sauget, Illinois, to get rid of some of the controlled substances that we couldn't send off with our generator. And that's what one of this bill is going to do. It's going to help clean up some of that language. But even with the cost of my gas, the cost of my wages, the cost of a hotel stay, we did our program for about $5,000. Right now we're taking in about 5 pounds a day. We've become a little more streamlined. I'm better at what I do. And we can do our program, and we're taking in 5 pounds a day in our county for our population level, and the program's going to cost about $5,000.
And I think we figured about $1,000 staff time a year.
Yes.
And $25 an hour.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Lewin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a quick question. Is your program strictly prescription drugs, or do you take over-the-counter meds and other things, too?
Sergeant Shrek.
We get a lot of over-the-counter medication. It's an anonymous drop box. We are not counting on the public to sort through this. That's why a lot of the stuff that we take in could go to the household hazardous waste facility. But one of the problems there is we can't count on the public to be able to sort through it and know what they're dropping off. And we don't want some of this going into the wrong hands, because some of it can only be handled through law enforcement because of the way the federal regulations are written. Therefore, we take it in. And that's one of the other things, is just cleaning out some medicine cabinets. There's been case studies where youth today, one of the big concoctions that they're using is a Robitussin. They get Robitussin and an energy drink. You drink the both bottles. Gives you a short high. Problem is, it can kill you. And we're just getting some of that off the shelf also.
So we tell people that we take prescription drugs, over-the-counter, and veterinary drugs also.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Lewin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick follow-up. So what percentage do you think of what you collect is over-the-counter, whether it's expired aspirin or cough syrup or versus prescription or narcotics?
Sergeant Shrek.
It's rather varied, and that's a very kind of a complicated question, because when we sort the drugs out, there's one class that I can't ship, and that's the kind of the class that we're looking at right now, which this bill is going to really help clear up, and that would be your oxycodones, your morphines and stuff like that, and that's only about 5% of what we're taking in. But then there's the whole other class, which includes all the Legend drugs and the other prescription medication. You only get it with the prescription. We've taken a very large volume of that, but we haven't actually calculated that out between that. It's about 50-50 would be my guess.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, seeing no other questions, thank you very much, Ms. Thibodeau and Sergeant Shrek. Next on the list, we have Karen Anderson from the Western Lake Superior Sanitary District. And if you could state your name for the tape as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Karen Anderson, and I'm the Community Relations Director for the Western Lake Superior Sanitary District. The Western Lake Superior Sanitary District is a regional wastewater treatment and solid waste authority in the lower St. Louis County and northeast Tarleton counties in Minnesota. We have the legislative mission, or the our mission in our enabling legislation is to protect and improve the waters of the lower St. Louis River. In 2007, the WLSSD became aware of a lot of the public the publicity and a lot of the research that began to find medications in detectable, small but detectable levels in our drinking water sources and in our natural water bodies. And WLSSD has always taken a very leadership role in pollution prevention, and actually has positioned its mercury removal program, and our pollution prevention program is really nationally recognized for its effectiveness both in wastewater treatment and in source reduction in the community. In, as I mentioned, in 2007, WLSSD started looking at this situation and was under the awareness that there were some states in the nation, specifically California, Maine, and Michigan, that had conducted some collection events. But WLSSD was, we were aware of the fact that there had not yet been one conducted in the state of Minnesota. And so we, at that time, applied for a grant through the Minnesota DNR Coastal Program and received a grant to really investigate what it was going to take to conduct safe and legal events such as the ones that were being collected across the country. How would we do this in the state of Minnesota, given the fact that each state has its own solid waste management rules, and we knew that there were some differences between Minnesota's and Michigan's and Maine's and the California rules. At the same time, of course, Chisago County was also investigating how they could do this through their sheriff's office. WLSSD, in addition to, I failed to mention, in addition to its wastewater treatment purpose, it is also the solid waste authority for this very specific region. During that time, we were also very much under the belief that a proactive approach to addressing some of the easily preventable sources of pharmaceuticals and hormones going into the water was a really good start to solving this program. It's the way that we addressed our mercury program, working and with the dental community, working with the community, removing mercury thermometers, things like that. We understood this was a way that we could prevent one portion of this from going into our waterways. We had the awareness, of course, that for many years residents had been advised to dispose of unwanted medications via flushing, and we were the source of flushing was coming to us. And so we knew that as we were discharging our effluent to the St. Louis River, and we discharge 40 million gallons a day of our effluent to the St. Louis River, we were having an impact. And we did see the that there were a lot of studies showing that the research showing that there is a potential to impact aquatic life with these hormones, and it can disrupt us from all sources. Sorry, I'm skipping through things because, of course, I wasn't aware of all of the information that would be presented in advance of me speaking. When we applied for our grant from the Minnesota Coastal Program, we did have support letters from the Minnesota Pharmacists Association, local pharmacists, the UMD College of Pharmacy, and area scientists from EPA and from the National Resources Research Institute. When we planned and hosted these events, we began to investigate all of the applicable laws and regulations, of course, and had received all of the necessary approvals from the U.S. The Drug Enforcement Administration, the Minnesota Board of Pharmacy, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and the Lake Superior Drug and Gang Task Force all worked with us to make these events, ensure that these events were going to be safe and legal. So with this grant, WLSSD conducted four events over a one-year period in our permanent household hazardous waste facility. We operate a facility that really serves a seven-county region. We send mobile collection trucks into some of the other counties and make so that we have this a larger program than would be serving just our one populated area. During that time, we conducted 4 quarterly events at our drive-through facility, and then 1 additionally in Grand Marais, because we thought that with the impact that we could have in trying to design a program that could be conducted without a permanent facility would be to the advantage of some of the smaller counties that don't have facilities such as ours at their disposal. Our model hired pharmacists to come in, sort the drugs as they were collected. As I said, we have a drive-through facility. People would drive up. UMD College of Pharmacy students would ask a short five question survey so that we would acquire data to understand why people would be coming with drugs. Was it the death of a family member? Was it an expired prescription? And really trying to understand how many households worth of drugs were coming in, and to provide us with some minimal data with these events. They would hand this off to our household hazardous waste technicians, who then turned it immediately over to pharmacists. The pharmacists would sort out the controlled substances and hand them over to the law enforcement that was on staff. We have currently developed partnerships with both the St. Louis County Sheriff's Department and the Duluth Police Department through the Lake Superior Drug and Gang Task Force, and they're providing all of those law enforcement services at no cost to us. Additionally, we have a partnership with a local health care system that is providing pharmacists at no cost to us. Many of the residents that have come through have expressed their sincere appreciation, as well as a real lack of understanding as to what they should be doing with these drugs in the absence of collection events. To date, we have now conducted 6 events. We wrapped up our grant in the fall of 2008. We had to wait for a period of time before we could acquire additional permission from the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration to conduct additional events. We received that permission last September and have a 1-year permission to work with the St. Louis County Sheriff's Department to continue to conduct events as often as we like, but that permission will expire in September, at which time we'll have to acquire additional permission to do any future events. During our 6 events that we have conducted to date, we have had nearly 2,000 households participating. We've collected 2,700 pounds of non-controlled substances and 145 pounds of controlled substances. We take all types of medications, whether they're over-the-counter or prescription, controlled or non-controlled. The biggest hurdles that we've seen in putting a program such as this together has truly been the costs. We received, midway through our coastal program grant, we received an additional $20,000 from the U.S. EPA Region 5 office, the Great Lakes National Program Office, to provide some educational dollars and to provide the funding needed to dispose of the controlled substances in Sauget, Illinois. We have found that it costs approximately during the grant period, because we were having to pay for law enforcement and pharmacists at the time, it was costing us approximately $4,500 per event. $2,200 or $2,300 or so was in promotion, just letting people know that this event was occurring, when it was occurring, and why it was occurring. Disposal is truly a larger challenge than we have had originally anticipated with us, and that truly is with the issues between the state of Minnesota rules indicating that we cannot dispose of hazardous waste. Pharmaceuticals are considered hazardous waste, can't dispose of hazardous waste in anywhere other place than a hazardous waste incinerator, and the closest one of those is in Illinois. And then as well that the law enforcement needs to continue their possession of the controlled substances until they are disposed of in a hazardous waste incinerator. I would tell you that with the 145 pounds of controlled substances, it costs us over $5,000 to dispose of those, just that packet of drugs. It was approximately 80 pounds. 2 Duluth police officers had to rent a vehicle to be kind of lower visibility. They drove without an overnight stay, so this did not include any lodging, but they had to drive to the waste incinerator in Illinois. They had to shut the incinerator down and then witness the destruction So there is a fee for both the destruction of the pharmaceuticals as well as shutting the incinerator down so that they could witness. And this is all to be in accordance with the U.S. Drug Enforcement Agency or administration rules. And then they would on the return trip. And so this is also, this bill that is being introduced is also something that will help with a lot of the complexity with disposing of the controlled substances as well as the cost burdens. And truly, as I'd indicated earlier, education is the largest cost. At this point, we have gotten the cost events down to $3,000 and about $2,200 to $2,300 worth of that at this point for each of the events is in promoting and educating.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Anderson. Are there any questions for Ms. Anderson? Okay, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Anderson, I have a question. I don't know if you can answer it, but you're a good person to start asking, being you're with the Sanitary Sewer District. What I'd like to know is, are there any figures or research that shows how much of the pharmaceutical waste that you deal with in the sewer system would come from people flushing it down the drain as compared to just the natural process of taking the medication and going to the bathroom?
Well, Ms. Anderson.
Oh, thank you. I'm sorry that I don't know that. And we do have two scientists that work very closely in our office with the U.S. EPA water laboratory up in the Duluth area, and they are trying to do as much research as possible into understanding some of these issues. However, in inquiring about this last week with to one of these particular scientists that we work with, he said he could find no record of any source or any research that would indicate what percent may be coming from what sources. I think it may vary by community because the influent or what's coming from each population is going to be very different coming into a wastewater treatment plant in each community.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you again, Ms. Anderson. Next, we have two people that will come forward next. Ms. Trudy Richter, who is with the Association of Minnesota Counties and Solid Waste Management Coordinating Board. Annalie Garlitz, also who is with the Association of Minnesota Counties. And if you could, again, state your name for the tape, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Annalie Garlitz, and I'm with the Association of Minnesota Counties. I'd like to thank Representative Gardner for bringing forward this particular product stewardship effort. Counties have been very supportive of the product stewardship model for several years, mostly because of product stewardship is carried out as designed. It does not involve county dollars. You've heard from us many times in the past that it is very important that counties not be left on the hook for costs of product stewardship models. So this is why we appreciate that this bill does not make county participation mandatory, but rather that it could help counties get reimbursement for programs such as the one that Chisago County has mentioned. And so we've been in close contact with Representative Gardner as he's run different drafts of this bill past us, and we'll continue to work with him as the bill progresses to monitor the changes and how everything goes.
Thank you, Ms. Garlitz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Trudy Richter. I'm here on behalf of the Solid Waste Management Coordinating Board. In lieu of Commissioner Victoria Reinhart, Ramsey County Commissioner and Chair of our board, who apologizes for not being here today but became a grandmother at 3:30 this afternoon and is pretty excited where she is today. But this is an important bill for the Solid Waste Management Coordinating Board, which it represents the six metropolitan counties exclusive of Scott County. The top initiative legislatively for the board is product stewardship. We believe that products need to be managed effectively by producer-led reduction, reuse, and recycling programs such as this. We're supportive of an overall extended producer responsibility framework approach, but while we're waiting to adopt such an approach in Minnesota, we think it is important that we take on specific product stewardship efforts such as this, shifting the responsibility away from counties with limited dollars to the producers of these drugs. So thank you, and thank Representative Gardner for all of his work on this.
Thank you, Ms. Richter.
Mr. Chair, I was just going to mention in your packet should be a resolution, a two-page resolution from the National Association of Counties, which in effect endorses a product stewardship model for dealing with this kind of waste.
Thank you, Representative Gardner. There it is. Okay, any questions for our two testifiers? Okay, seeing none, thank you again, Ms. Richter and Ms. Garlitz. Next, we have Ms. Catherine Zimmer from the Minnesota Technical Assistance Project. Welcome, Ms. Zimmer. You can state your name for the tape.
Yes, my name is Catherine Zimmer, and I work for the Minnesota Technical Assistance Program, actually. And we are housed in the School of Public Health at the University of Minnesota. I just want to give you a little bit of background on what we do. We've been working on issues of what we call pollution prevention using a strategy called source reduction for 25 years. We work with all different varieties of businesses in Minnesota. And I've been working on reducing pollution associated with the healthcare sector for 12 years at MNTAP. And then I actually worked in the healthcare sector in a variety of other capacities for 11 years. I want to thank Representative Gardner for asking me to come and talk today. And I wanted to just give you a little bit of background on why we do what we do. And a lot of it has already been discussed today. But as has been discussed, there's a lot of environmental and public health problems associated with waste management. And we've talked about those today with pharmaceuticals, but with all waste, actually. There's pollution and potential public health impacts associated with that. So that's basically why we work with businesses on what we call source reduction, which is actually getting at the root cause of the waste rather than playing the shell game of, now we've got the waste, what do we do with it? So we try to help them reduce waste at the source, help them acknowledge that waste doesn't have to be a part of the cost of doing business, and it actually ends up saving them money as well as reducing the environmental and potential public health impact of the waste. I've been working on the issue of pharmaceutical source reduction for about 6 years. I've worked with a variety of healthcare facilities around the state. I want to give you some examples of hospitals that I've worked with. We've done some work with Hennepin County Medical Center a couple years ago on actually doing some inventory reduction and improved inventory management practices and saved them about $80,000 a year. We worked with Tri-County Hospital in Wadena, which is a smaller hospital, 25-bed. Similar kinds of strategies, and they're saving them about $30,000 a year. Representative Gardner wanted me to speak specifically to the issue of utilizing the practice of source reduction in long-term care facilities. We have recently done some work with long-term care facilities in this regard and have found that they can reduce the amount of waste associated with their operations by using what is called an automated distribution system. And that is simply, for those of you that have been in healthcare facilities, you may have seen these. They look kind of like vending machines for pharmaceuticals. Historically, they have not been widely used in long-term care facilities to some extent because for controlled substances or the narcotics, they weren't necessarily permitted. And so actually the Drug Enforcement Administration 5 years ago specifically permitted the use of these machines in long-term care facilities. And it was in Federal Register 7092. The reason that they can, that automated distribution systems can minimize waste in long-term care facilities is because once the drugs are loaded into the system by a pharmacist, they are considered under the control of the pharmacist until they are removed for distribution to the patient or the resident, or until the pharmacist comes and removes them to take them back for reuse and re-dispensing. Otherwise, if they aren't managed in that manner, then the long-term care facility basically has a waste on their hands, and they have to figure out a way to deal with it. And it's particularly problematic for them because they are not registrants under with the Drug Enforcement Administration, and they really have no options for disposal or sending them back to the pharmacy under DEA rules. So it's particularly problematic, and So this last summer we did a study at Oak Hills Living Center in New Ulm, and Oak Hills is a long-term care facility with 125 residents. And the purpose of the project was actually to look at the use of an automated distribution system in a long-term care facility. I worked with the Board of Pharmacy and Aging Services of Minnesota to develop this project. And the Board of Pharmacy actually worked with us throughout the course of developing and researching this project to make sure that we were addressing the concerns they had associated with it. Basically, what we did is we reviewed a number of different automated distribution systems for their feasibility for use in long-term care facilities. And ultimately, we identified one. I'm not going to mention the name, but you can ask me later if you'd like, that we found would be very effective. Ultimately, even after implementation and paying for the machine itself, which is about $60,000, we found that Oak Hills would save about $20,000 a year, potentially eliminating over 35,000 oral tablets of waste. About half of that, 18,000, was controlled substances, and the rest was primarily legend drugs. Doing this not only would save the private pay residents about $200 per person per year, but also some of the other cost savings associated with this would be reduced labor for the nursing staff, because then they are no longer inventorying, documenting, managing, and flushing controlled substances. And in this case, just to give you an idea of how much pharmaceutical waste they were generating about a liter or 2.2 pounds, and that's just unwrapped pills in a container per month that was being flushed to the sanitary sewer. So, okay. Happy to answer questions.
Great. Well, thank you. Any questions for Ms. Zimmer? Okay, seeing none, thank you again. And we have Mr. Vern Wagner and Ms. Rose, is it Rongish?
Yes.
Is that correct? Okay. And they're here for the Anglers for Habitat.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Vern Wagner. I'm Vice President of Anglers for Habitat. We're a recently formed fishing and conservation organization. We were put together so we could participate in conversations about fishing and clean water in Minnesota. And so I'd like to speak in support of this bill, which helps to keep chemicals out of our water supply. Now, some of my fishing buddies who've seen my skills probably think I'd benefit from having the fish doped up. They might be a little bit more easier to catch. I'll pass on that, considering the effect that it has on the fish. You know, fishing here in Minnesota is a $2.8 billion industry. So when you start pouring chemicals into pharmaceuticals, into our water supply, you're affecting our fishing. This is a very powerful economic resource for Minnesota. And fish are not going to exist without healthy lakes and rivers. And we need clean water and aquatic habitat, and we need these types of controls to preserve what has been a big part of Minnesota. You know, we have 1.4 million anglers in this state, and we're rated the third highest state in angler expenditures. Now, I don't really want to let my wife know about that, that I may be overrepresented in that demographic. But, yeah, we spend a lot of money on fishing. And we're concerned about this. You know, good habitat is good business for Minnesota. Right now, we have about 10, we talk about 10,000 lakes in Minnesota, and about 6,000 of those are commonly fished. But our guide right now, which doesn't even include many of these chemicals that are being put into the wastewater, our fishing guide right now to hazardous waste chemicals is over 150 pages long. We cannot afford to continue to contribute these types of drugs and to our system. We have certainly seen the evidence that we're seeing a change in the fish population, and there's also evidence that we're seeing changes in the human population because of this. So I'd like to say that, you know, we're on behalf of the fishermen and anglers in Minnesota, and you mentioned smallmouth bass. You know, we're interested in those. I'm interested in those, and I'd like to keep them healthy and swim in the right direction. with me today, I have Rose Radovich, and she'll introduce herself. Rose is an independent filmmaker who's recently completed a documentary called Humanity Disrupted, which is about endocrine disruptors. And I brought her with today. This is her first time, probably scared to death. However, I brought her for that reason, but also for a second reason, is that Rose, to me, represents the next generation of folks who we're turning our lakes and our rivers and our clean water over to. And I hope that future generations, when we turn our water over to them, that it's in better shape than when it was given to my generation. So I'll turn it over to Rose.
Welcome, Ms. Rungich, and if you could state your name for the tape.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Rose Rungich, and I'm an independent documentary producer. I recently graduated from University of Wisconsin River Falls with a degree in broadcast journalism and environmental studies. What spawned the documentary was about 3 years ago. I was in a science class, and I learned about male fish that were becoming female in the Mississippi River, and this just didn't sit right with me. I didn't, you know, it, you know, we get our drinking water from there, and I had to do more research on it. So I was interning with SPN at St. Paul Neighborhood Network. That summer I had 3 internships, and I asked SPN if I could do my own independent project, and they said I could. So it started out with the feminization of the fish, which I started researching, and so I set up a series of interviews with Heiko Schoenfuss. He's a leading researcher at the Aquatic Toxicology Laboratory at St. Cloud State University. Dr. Timothy LaPera, a civil engineering professor at the U of M. Scott Vreeland, a Minneapolis Recreation Park Board commissioner, and a few other professors. And to interview them on camera, like, what's going on here? You know, what's the whole picture? And so I learned all about endocrine disruptors, and also learned that pharmaceuticals do play a part in endocrine disrupting aquatic life and human life. Male, they get, you know, as we discussed today, they're getting into the water through the wastewater filtration system because they're not designed to filter them out, and into the drinking water filtration because those aren't designed to filter them out either. So they're coming from our lifestyles and getting back into us and into the fish. And so some things that I learned throughout this research was pretty, it seemed a little odd. I mean, male sperm count worldwide has gone down by 50% in the last 50 years, and this is really being correlated to endocrine disruption. Also, cancer rates are rising, which has been linked to endocrine disruption. There's been more baby males being born with genital mutations. Girls are experiencing menstruation earlier and earlier. So basically, just really weird things are occurring. And the thing is with endocrine disruptors, and I know pharmaceuticals don't account for all endocrine disruptors, but the thing is that even the smallest amount contributes to large effects. These endocrine disruptors, they react with our biological systems, and trace amounts can cause long-term biological problems. Fetuses are being exposed to endocrine disruptors. They're measured in women's breast milk. So a fetus, for example, at a very critical stage in development, even being exposed to even the smallest amount of endocrine disruptors can change the outcourse of the life of that individual. So it's a serious issue, and it is affecting us, and we are noticing changes, and I think we can learn from the fish, the feminization of the male fish. Male fish are growing ovaries inside their bodies throughout rivers and lakes in the United States. Learn from them. I mean, humans are starting to experience this as well. Is the decrease in male sperm count is, and scientists are saying that this could lead to an overall reduction in male fertility. And with the fish population, scientists are also saying that this is going to reduce their probabilities of being able to reproduce as well. So fish populations are dropping. This is a very serious issue, and I was honored to be able to research this issue, and the documentary that I worked on outlines this whole issue. It's called Humanity Disrupted, the Threat of Endocrine Disruptors. So that's what I learned, and it's so I think that this bill is very important in that.
Great. Well, thank you, Ms. Rongich. Any questions for our testifiers? Thanks again.
Thank you.
And Mr. Doug Beardsley from Care Providers. Welcome.
Chairman Ecken, Representative Gardner, and members of the committee, my name is Doug Beardsley. I'm the Vice President of Member Services at Care Providers of Minnesota, and I'm also a licensed nursing home administrator. Unfortunately, I'm the first person to come to this table and say, but. Nice idea, good bill, but we have some concerns. I'm speaking today representing the Long-Term Care Imperative, which is a collaborative effort between Care Providers of Minnesota and Aging Services of Minnesota, the two state long-term care provider associations. Our goal is to advance a shared vision and future for older adult housing, health care, and supportive services. We believe that this bill represents a good effort to minimize pharmaceutical waste entering the environment, both in landfills and water sources. However, we believe that these issues are national issues and need to be addressed on a national, not state level. In addition, we have concerns that although the bill specifically prohibits pharmaceutical producers from passing on any additional costs to the consumers for the proposed product stewardship, we believe that health care costs will indeed increase for the consumer, including the medical assistance program, as a result of this proposed action. It appears excluded from the definition of health care facilities in the bill are health plans, hospitals, and doctors. The plan for these interested parties is to convene productive stakeholder discussions after the legislative session. We believe that nursing homes, hospice agencies, home health care agencies, boarding care homes, and supervised living facilities should be included in this bill rather they should be given the same opportunity as hospitals, including the stakeholder sessions after the legislative session, to determine system-wide solution issues. We're not exactly sure why nursing homes and similar long-term care facilities are excluded, but are included, but hospitals are excluded. We are both dealing with many of the same issues. That being said, there are many very specific concerns regarding how this bill would interact with current rules and recommendations currently in place for some of the providers affected by this bill. Specifically, healthcare facilities listed in this section is unclear. For example, the section lists home care, yet Minnesota has multiple levels of home care agencies, many which are not responsible for the ordering, purchasing, reordering, or removal of their clients' pharmaceuticals. In general, the only category of Minnesota home care agency that is responsible for clients' medications is a Class F home care agency, and then only if their service plan provides for central storage of medications. So there's a problem in that definition. Additionally, the section also prohibits that identified health care facilities from destroying or disposing any drug by flushing it into the sewer or septic system. Other parts of the bill require new methods for collecting unwanted products, which are inconsistent with current Minnesota rules. specifically parts of the proposed legislation that are in direct conflict with the following rules and our recommendations are the following. Minnesota Boarding Care Home Rules 4655.7850 Subdivision 2 states, destroying unused prescription drugs. Unused portions of prescription drugs remaining in the boarding care home after the death or discharge of the resident for whom they were prescribed for, or any prescriptions discontinued currently, shall be destroyed by the person in charge in the boarding care home by flushing them into the sewer system and removing and destroying the labels from containers. That is the current Minnesota rule for boarding care homes. Nursing home rules where there's a problem. 4658.1350 Subdivision 2, Section A, disposition of medications. Unused portions of controlled substances remaining in the nursing home after the death or discharge of a resident for whom they are prescribed, or any controlled substance discontinued permanently, must be destroyed in a manner recommended by the Board of Pharmacy or the consultant pharmacist. Currently, that means they provide a form called Document Form A81, which says all controlled substances must be destroyed in the presence of the administrator or designee and either the consulting vendor or pharmacist. It cannot be just taken off site. FDA recommendations. Currently, the FDA recommends 26 medications that they recommend flushing. Currently, that is the only recommended method by the FDA for these 26 medications. That is not included in this bill. And lastly, we're very encouraged by the work that the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and MNTAP is doing with long-term care facilities. However, currently on the MNTAP's website, there's a section that says controlled substances. And that reads, controlled substances are drugs defined as a Schedule 1 through 4 controlled substance by the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration, the DEA. Until alternate disposal is approved by the DEA, controlled substances may be disposed of by discharging to the sanitary sewer system with prior notice to the water treatment authorities. These are just few of the problems right now that we're nursing homes and home cares would find themselves in direct conflict with the proposed legislation. Again, we think the concept and idea of minimizing medications in the sewer systems and in the drug landfills is a good and laudable goal. We just don't want to be caught in the middle of conflicting regulations and priorities. With that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Beardsley. Any questions? Okay, seeing none, thanks again, Mr. Beardsley. And next, we're going to have two people who will come forward, Ms. Judy Cook and Mr. Ed Maloney. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Ed Maloney. I'm Vice President of Business Development at Paddock Laboratories, a generic pharmaceutical manufacturer in New Hope. We're a small company, have about 400 employees. My colleagues representing Mylan, who's about 15 times our size, to give you some idea of the scope. But I'm a little dubious, one, of the cost estimate of $1 million a year. Right now, I spend about $250,000 a year processing reverse distribution of products that are returned to me from the trade. And these are full containers and very easy to count and measure, and include narcotics. But I make hundreds of millions of tablets a year, which, if they come back one or two at a time, I'm very concerned that the administrative burden there, if we get involved with that at Paddock, would be overwhelmingly expensive. I'm very concerned with the prepaid envelope costs that I can hardly imagine would be less than $5-6 a piece. The average price of the products we manufacture in the generic side at Paddock is about $11 per unit that I sell. And I have one product that I sell for less than a dollar that I sell over a million of. And so I'm very concerned to get a tablet back and have to pay $5 to process this through the system. And what's eventually going to happen is
the prices are going to have to go up if the costs of processing these things go up. I also have some questions about, do we know the answer to why these pharmaceuticals get into the water? Is it because of flushing, or is it because of unmetabolized drug substance that's excreted from the human body? I think it would be nice to know the answer to that or get some research into that before we unilaterally make a law that is going to be burdensome and create a lot of administrative costs.
Thank you very much. And Ms. Cook.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Judy Cook with Cook Hill Girard Associates. I'm testifying today on behalf of Bruce Lott with Mylan Labs. Bruce had planned to be here himself, but weather in Washington, D.C. was not cooperative with his travel plans. We appreciate the opportunity to comment on House File 1217, legislation requiring manufacturer-funded take-back programs of unused prescription drugs. Mylan is one of the world's leading generic specialty pharmaceutical companies and is the largest generic manufacturer headquartered in the United States. We'd like to provide you with some feedback on this legislation. First of all, Mylan shares the goals of the proponents of this legislation to protect Minnesota's water and environment. We support the efforts to make it easier for voluntary programs. Somebody earlier mentioned red tape. If there's ways to work through that, we think that makes a lot of sense. However, we are very concerned with the mandates in this legislation. It will provide limited results at a very great cost. It goes without saying that a major reason for unused drugs is that patients do not always follow the directions of their physicians and don't take all the medications that have been prescribed for them. But that issue is not really addressed in this legislation. We know that patients do not always follow the directions, and there will always be some drugs that require disposal that are unneeded for some reason. But we have some serious concerns about this proposed legislation, especially its impact on the cost availability of affordable generic pharmaceuticals. And I think one thing that hasn't happened yet today is a description of what the bill means for a drug manufacturer. The way I understand it, and please correct me if I'm wrong, what's required here to sell your product in the state is that you must register with the Pollution Control Agency and pay a yet-to-be-determined fee to the Pollution Control Agency. And you must have an adequate program as determined by the Pollution Control Agency or pay for the county collection program to be determined by the Pollution Control Agency. But it doesn't specify what that means. We have no idea what the PCA will determine is our share. Okay, and I'll go into that a little bit more, but any of you who are here for e-waste, we had a lot of discussion about share. Well, I mean, that issue doesn't go away when you talk about drugs. What is the manufacturer's responsibility here? It is very unclear. So we don't know how much each manufacturer would have to pay in order to sell their product in Minnesota. And again, I'll talk about that again. I want to just spend a couple minutes on generics. And I know this isn't the Health Committee, but I think before you act on this bill, it's important to understand. Generics currently account for 74% of prescriptions dispensed in the United States, yet account for only 22% of the dollars spent on pharmaceuticals overall. If a program such as the one proposed becomes law, it would result in a significant increase in the cost of doing business in Minnesota. In the case of generics, many prescription drugs are commodity products that sell for pennies per pill, and the cost of the proposed product stewardship program could easily outstrip the manufacturer's entire price for the product. The marketplace for generic drugs is very different and more complicated than for brands. They operate in a hyper-competitive market, multiple companies offering the same products, prices intensely negotiated. This results in incredible savings for consumers, for government, and the healthcare system. But this extreme competition leaves very razor-thin margins for generic manufacturers, which leaves no room to fund a program such as the one proposed here. This is especially true if a fee to cover the cost of collection and disposal of unused drugs cannot be mandated at the point of sale or collection. So it would obviously result in higher prices for generic drugs in Minnesota. If participation in a competitive market is reduced by one or more companies that are unable to sustain business activity in Minnesota due to the cost of such a program, the rules of supply and demand would also predict price increases across the board. At a time when we're working to reduce health care costs, doesn't seem like this is a very good outcome. While the concept of product stewardship programs has great appeal for many, we respectfully suggest that unused drugs are a very different waste product to manage as compared to rechargeable batteries, electronic arrays, mercury thermometers. First of all, drugs aren't going to be recycled as in the other programs. There's no valuable material that you get out of it, like with the other product stewardship programs. There's a vast majority of manufacturers, obviously, I mean, as many residential generators as households we have in the state. So it is a massive, massive program. Another thing to keep in mind is pharmaceuticals are one of the most heavily regulated products in America, and particularly with respect to controlled substances. So this makes it more difficult, as has been described by the proponents of the bill. Law enforcement has to be involved. It's not as simple as just taking it back and, you know, giving it back to Best Buy like your electronics. Mr. Maloney mentioned the take back of product from within industry. In the case of Mylan, their program costs approximately 75 cents per unit, bottle, or package return for processing and disposal. So, for example, pharmacy has drugs they need to return back to Mylan. Our cost is 75 cents. That does not include shipping. It's just our cost of overseeing the management of that. It hasn't come up yet. There's been some discussion of a British Columbia program. I just want you to know that is voluntary, and they don't have controlled substances there, so it's a much different program. There's a Maine pilot program, and in order to comply with USDEA rules on handling of controlled substances, the Maine pilot has reported a cost of $5 to $7 per return drug due to the special envelopes, postage, law enforcement, etc. That's a lot of money. We know that large retailers sell generics at a very low cost. Generic manufacturers simply cannot afford to pay more to take back a bottle of pills than we sold it for in the first place. And I'd also like your indulgence to just comment a little bit based on my experience on these issues over the years. Some of you may remember SCORE. I was an alternate on SCORE, and I was a member of, which was the Select Committee on Recycling and the Environment, and I was a member of SCOPE, which was the Select Committee on Packaging and the Environment. That was the mid and late 80s. So I've been working on these issues for a really long time. I guess I've dated myself. But I see a number of basic flaws in this bill based on that experience. First of all, there is no disposal ban for consumers. So now when you take this bill and in the amendment you add county programs, Mylan and other manufacturers will be forced to set up very costly programs, and we have no guarantee of any waste stream, whatever you want to call it, no stream of product coming back. I think in all the other product stewardship programs we have, there is a disposal ban. We basically tell people it's against the law to put it in your regular waste stream. Secondly, the determination of share of responsibility for each manufacturer is left up to the PCA. This is very troubling. There's no rulemaking. There's no standards. We have no idea what that's going to be. And I don't even want to know what's going to happen at the PCA. I mean, as I read it, there's not a lot of guidance there. And I imagine there might, I just don't know how that would work. Again, as stated earlier, it's not for recycling. There's no valuable materials. Think about enforcement. We haven't talked about that. It appears that retailers have the responsibility to police which products are on their shelves. Is this really the case that you want to tell a retailer, a pharmacy, that if you have a generic drug on your shelf and that manufacturer is not participating in the program, that they instead have to dispense the more expensive brand drug? That really is what this says. So it's increased costs for consumers. And finally, I mean, as the proponents have stated, we don't really know where the what we find in the water and in the waste stream related to drugs, what the source is. So Mylan respectfully opposes House File 1217. We welcome an opportunity to work with other concerned parties to develop alternative measures that could address the chief goal of this legislation without adding to the cost of affordable generic prescription drugs. Thank you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Cook. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is for Mr. Maloney. You mentioned a figure of $250,000 a year that you incur in cost. I think you were referring to the drugs that get sent back to you, time expired or people don't need them anymore or whatever. I'm wondering, short of not disclosing some trade secret, or, and I respect that if you're not able to tell me that, I'm just curious, how many drugs is that or how many pounds? And then, and if you don't mind, I understand that.
Well, it's a lot. It's many thousands of pounds. We make a lot of liquid products. They're very heavy. And so, and ours all go to the same fate as what we were talking about with the sheriff. They get burned in a hazardous waste incinerator. I don't have an exact number for you, though.
Representative Maximoff.
And you kind of, thank you, Mr. Chair. You alluded a little bit, and that was going to be my question. Do you send it to the same place that a couple other earlier testifiers talked about down in Illinois, or are you able to use a different place? And are you subjected to the same requirements of police officer, peace officer needing to go with if they're controlled substance?
Mr. Maloney.
I believe our incinerator is in Florida. And we work with a company that actually helps do all the administrative functions. In other words, a wholesaler would ask us for a return authorization. We would give them a return authorization instructing them to send it to the facility in Florida. There's an exception to that would be the Drug Enforcement Administration controlled products. We have to issue them a Form 222, which is a multi-part pain in the neck, but it's a DEA form. They'll return it to us. Then we'll accumulate a fairly large amount of these, and then we will get a DEA Form 222 sent to us by the destruction facility. And this destruction facility, we will ship it to them, and they will have it witnessed by DEA employees when it's destroyed.
And Representative Bigham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first, Ms. Cook, I would say that I don't think 1980s are old, nor would I think 1979 is old. But just recognizing, sir, and thank you for testifying. Thank you for everybody who is testifying, who has testified today. This is a very important topic, and I thank Representative Gardner for bringing it forward. My question is, recognizing that generic drugs obviously don't make as much profit as, say, pharma, would you be willing to share what your profits were last year, whether it's Milan or whether it's your company, just out of curiosity?
Mr. Maloney?
We netted after our EBITDA was about $13 million on sales of about $165 million.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bigham, I do not know the answer to that question.
Any other questions? Representative Lewin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'd like to thank the witnesses for their testimony. Ms. Cook, you keyed in on something that I think is important here, is with regards to kind of the consumer's end of this and kind of leaving that open, because it's the people who ultimately have possession of the prescription drugs or over-the-counter, how they're going to deal with it. Are you aware of any programs that Minnesota does now or any other state to whether it's through a public service announcement or something to talk about disposal of drugs or unwanted products of the nature that this bill is trying to get at?
I am aware of Ms. one, and I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, Representative Loon. I am aware of one. I'm certainly not an expert on it. It's called Smart RX disposal. You guys, I think someone else will testify about that.
Any other questions? Okay, seeing none. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Next, let's see. Mr. Griffin. From the Life Science Alley. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Phil Griffin. I'm here today on behalf of my client, Life Science Alley. Life Science Alley represents nearly 600 life science companies, including many locally headquartered medical device, pharmaceutical, and biotech companies. These companies range in size from small startups to multi-international organizations that devote their efforts to research, development, and commercialization of the life sciences. In Minnesota, they provide 50,000 high-wage skilled jobs. Minnesota is home to the second largest cluster of medical device companies in the world. And when we were talking earlier about the impact of fishing, and a lot of us love fishing, we dwarf that. The top 10 companies have at least $18 billion in sales. So we would ask you to look at this bill very carefully. And, Mr. Chairman, we are here as Life Science Alley to oppose House File 1217 today. And we question that the evidence in front of you really supports the wisdom of passing this legislation. First, we've heard evidence that the water contamination is overwhelmingly the direct result of human excretions and not discarded drugs. While we would be requiring an elaborate collection system, there's no evidence that such a system would have a real impact on reducing groundwater contamination. Second, the argument that collections keep dangerous drugs out of the hands of our children is anecdotal at best. Third, and you've already heard this from Ms. Cook, but setting up a state program with all the details and costs to be determined by an agency runs a substantial risk of increasing costs of health care. And while those costs may be small in the totality of health care costs, any increase that you make in costs this year due to regulation that does not increase access or improve quality should not be made. Mr. Chairman and members, last but not least, we would ask you as a legislature to very closely look at all the bills you're seeing this year as they might impact the Life Sciences Alley, the Life Sciences rather, and not do anything that would create harm to our industry. The state economist testified several weeks ago before the legislature about the impact of the downturn in the economy. And the one thing that he said about our industry is that this is the only sector that has provided any growth in manufacturing in this state in the last 10 years. And we don't want to do anything to harm that. And you have a number of proposals that are coming before you today, and we would put this bill in that category. The need to protect our natural resources is essential, as is the need to control health care costs and keep our economy strong. For these reasons, we would oppose the passage of House File 1217. If there are questions, Mr. Chairman or members, I'd be happy to take them.
Thank you, Mr. Griffin. Any questions?
Mr. Chairman, seeing members, none. Representative Gardner, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next, Dr. Patrick Moore from Green Spirit. Welcome, Dr. Moore. You could state your name for the tape.
Representative Gardner, representatives, my name is Patrick Moore. I'm with Green Spirit Strategies Limited in Vancouver, Canada. I've spent the last 40 years working on environmental issues around the world. I have a PhD in ecology from the University of British Columbia, an honorary doctor of science from North Carolina State University, and I was just a couple of years ago awarded the National Award for Nuclear Science and History. The reason I'm coming before you today, and I'm here as an advisor to pharma on environmental and sustainability issues, is because I really think, even though there are very good intentions associated with this bill, that it's going to cost a lot of money and there's not going to be any good result from it. And we've heard discussion about how much of the pharmaceutical residues in our waterways is from disposal versus going through human systems and our animals in veterinary care. And the figure is at least 90%, perhaps 95%, is through the regular taking of medicine to keep us and our livestock healthy. So when you think of that, that perhaps you will be affecting somewhere between 5 and 10% if you had 100% compliance, which will never happen because people are going to dispose of pharmaceuticals that they don't want in the easiest way in many cases because they don't want to go to the trouble of putting it in a special mailer. You are going to have an extremely marginal and perhaps meaningless impact on the situation. I'd like to just remind you that the levels of these materials that are found in the natural environment are in the parts per trillion. And it's been pointed out that there's a situation in Maine where leachate has been collected. But the people who collected it, the environmental authorities there, are quoted as saying, the pharmaceuticals found in the landfills don't pose a direct threat to drinking water. The landfills are lined. aren't any wastewater plants that treat leachate and discharge into rivers that ultimately supply drinking water. So there is no problem in Maine from a human health point of view, according to the people there. With regard to the rather fantastic statements about fish becoming females and males growing ovaries and all of this stuff, this is mostly from the lifestyle section of newspapers rather than from any actual definitive studies in this world that actually are capable of linking pharmaceuticals in the environment with impacts to biology. There is no actual evidence of harm that is definitive in the science. The fact of the matter is these materials are at such low levels that it is very unlikely that they are causing any effect to aquatic life or human life. Most importantly, we talked about 90% being from taking the medicines and going through our systems. When it comes to hormones, estrogen in particular, but other hormones as well, which are of most concern because of the possibility of acting as hormones in the environment, it's virtually 100% is going through people who are taking those hormones or through animals that they're being administered to. So this take-back program would have absolutely zero impact on those programs, on those levels. Representative Gardner, I beg to differ with the farming for drugs and the real estate going in to look at a house for real estate and then going into the medicine chest and taking the medicine. Almost all the medicine in most people's medicine chest is medicine that they are either taking or keeping to take at some time in the future if they need it again. All the medicine in the medicine chest isn't unused medicine. Most of it is medicine that is supposed to be there. So the only solution to that is to lock your medicines in the same way you would lock your guns if you want to make sure no one can get at your prescription medication. You've got to secure it somehow. If you're worried about your children taking it, if you're worried about strangers coming in your house while it's for sale taking it, the only solution there is to secure it. This has nothing to do with the take-back program whatsoever. I just don't understand how anybody could believe that if you make the pharmaceutical companies pay for these programs, that the consumers aren't going to end up paying for them. I mean, it's a natural law of economics that these costs will be passed on. And therefore, you will increase the cost of the healthcare system, something that most people seem to be concerned about these days. Why would you do that for negligible and perhaps zero benefit to anything? I think you need a proper cost-benefit analysis here of the different factors involved in this. For example, how much air pollution and greenhouse gases are emitted by the vehicles driving a few pounds of drugs all the way to Illinois for destruction? How much environmental impact is caused by a take-back program compared to the environmental impact of parts per trillion of some substances in the environment, over most of which we don't have any control anyways unless we stop taking medicines? So I really think that this needs to be thought through more carefully as a result of those points. And source reduction, we heard a lot about source reduction. That's an excellent thing, but it doesn't have anything to do with a take-back program, except that maybe there'd be less to take back. But it isn't really germane to it specifically as to whether you have one. We all agree that nobody should flush medicine down the toilet. I think maybe you should focus this approach a little bit in the state, because I do believe the larger issues of water quality and pollution are federal issues. The EPA doesn't seem to be, you know, getting all excited about this issue, probably because their scientists are telling them, just like the ones in Maine, that it isn't really an issue of public health. And that's where that legislation should come. But if you want to really make a difference here with regard to the medicines that are being flushed down the toilet, make it so that your laws are changed there. And you have people putting their unused medication, if it can't go back to the pharmacy, in the trash in the manner that is described in the Smart Disposal Program of Pharma, which is supported in big bold print by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service would not support a program that was bad for fish and wildlife. And the reason they support this program is they know that you actually make a difference when you switch from flushing to trash. And if you could just do that one thing in this state and encourage other states to do that and to move people away from the obvious thing of taking it out of the mesocamp and putting it in the toilet, that's way too easy. So they do have to go to a little more trouble to take it in the kitchen and put it in a baggie and add some coffee grounds and put it in the trash. But I think we can educate people to do that if we work on it really hard. And that is what the Smart RX Disposal Program is all about. I know I've probably taken more time than I should. I'm just going to make sure I know the e-waste issue was covered, that there's no recycling issue here, so it's a totally different thing than e-waste. It adds another layer of collection, transport, and disposal, and more greenhouse gas, and more trucks running around on the road all over the place. And there is no need to add a whole nother level of transport and disposal and bureaucracy. This can be done best by moving from flushing. That's where your biggest bang for your buck will be, and it's not going to be a very expensive thing to do. It's a matter of educating, moving from flushing to disposal in municipal waste, which either goes to landfill or incinerator. As we move it forward, we're going to be moving a lot more away from landfills in this country, as they have in Europe and Japan and other places where land is too expensive to put your garbage. And so energy from waste is the rule in all those countries. And the energy from waste plants are designed today to be good enough to dispose of pharmaceuticals and to destroy them without having to create a whole new bureaucracy to do that. So education is the solution, not an additional layer of bureaucracy. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Gardner.
Thank you. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Moore, I'm sorry that in the beginning I think I didn't understand who you are speaking for in this testimony.
I mentioned in the beginning that I'm an advisor to pharma on the issues of environment and sustainable development, which includes social and economic priorities.
Okay,
as well.
And then if you could tell me which companies are part of pharma?
Dr. Moore?
Could you get a list for you? The next person coming up is from pharma, so that would be best to ask them.
All right, and so you're position essentially is we have no responsibility. That's what I'm hearing. Is that
no? Not at all,
Dr. Moore.
The Smart Disposal Program isn't a responsible program. It's trying to educate people to stop flushing drugs down the toilet, which is the biggest problem with regard to preventable medicines in the environment. The part that goes through us is not preventable because we can't make our digestive system perfect. We don't metabolize all the medicine we take and it comes out the other end of us. Nothing we can do about that. But I certainly wouldn't suggest that the pharmaceutical industry isn't a responsible industry.
That's the message I'm getting. I just want to share that with you, that it's somebody else's responsibility, not mine. And maybe when some folks from pharma come up, they can talk about who is actually we're hearing from, because pharma as a word means nothing to me.
Well, as you'll find, pharma is the Association of Pharmaceutical Organizations.
I understand that. I want to know who we're talking about here. Is it all drug companies? Is it some drug companies? Let's have a list of who you're speaking for. I want to see how much responsibility you all have for our community when you're talking about our waters. We actually drink our river water. Minnesotans drink their river water. Some, not all, but certainly people in my city do. And so to minimize this is a non-important. It's really offensive. We drink the river water. We know what's happening to the fish. It is a very small amount that's changing fish. We have good scientists in Minnesota who've been telling our committees this very thing. So I feel like you were saying, Minnesotans, you're not very important here. That's the message I'm getting, and it's a very hard message to hear.
I'm sorry, but I did not intend to give that impression, as you can well imagine. I don't quite know how you got it, actually.
Well, it's because, if I could, Mr. Chairman, my constituents drink river water. We know that in our rivers, our fish, well, boy fish are becoming little girl fish. That's a fact. And we can see some of the things that the hormone disruptors that are causing that. Pharmaceuticals are endocrine disruptors. So my what I'm looking for here is some sense of responsibility that your industry might have for Minnesotans. I'm not finding it. That's what's perturbing me.
And,
so we'll hear from the companies.
And yeah, the next testifier can respond to that. And Representative Purcell has a question as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And more of a comment. I just in regard to that we can't prevent what goes through the human body. There are some who promote, you know, flushless and composting toilets. So that would be a method that we could use there too. So just want to point that out.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else? Good. Well, thank you, Dr. Moore.
Thank you.
Next, Ms. Marjorie Powell from Pharma. Welcome, Ms. Powell. You could state your name for the tape, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Marjorie Powell. I am here today from Pharma. I am representing the women and the men, including many of those in companies that are members of Life Science Alley that are doing research to find, develop, and bring to market the new medications. We have, I'm not sure I can give you an exact number, but approximately 48 member companies that are listed on our website, and I would be happy to get the committee a copy of that list. We are the companies that are doing research on new medications. We think that first and foremost, it is important that patients who have been prescribed a medication take that medication as they've been directed by their physician. But we recognize that there are some instances where I get a 30-day script filled and then I have a bad reaction, or it, as happened with my mother, the high blood pressure medication made her dizzy and she already had osteoporosis, so the doctor changed her medication 3 times, 4 times, 5 times before they found one that worked, and she had unused medicines in her medicine cabinet. We believe that the most effective way to dispose of unused medicines is to put them in the household trash. We were approached by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, which had decided that disposal in the household trash was the most efficient disposal way, and asked to participate in their SmartRx disposal program. And if there is a staff member who can distribute these, I have copies of our program. We have been working with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the Pharmacy Association to try and educate consumers about the efficient and effective disposal of prescription drugs. As Dr. Moore said, our research scientists at the companies have done a number of studies, and I can get the committee members copies of the published peer-reviewed literature that shows that the vast majority of the infinitesimal amounts of pharmaceuticals that are in the environment are there from human use. And I can't speak to the issue of composting toilets. The ones I've used have been very efficient. Actually, I was doing a lot of hiking over the Christmas holiday and found frequently I was using composting toilets. But that's not my issue. The concern is that, yes, there are changes in the fish. We do not deny that there are changes in the fish, but we, as pharmaceutical companies, have been looking at the effects of the pharmaceutical compounds on both humans and on animals and on minute organisms in the surface water. And we've been studying the effects of those, and we have not found any appreciable effects that can be associated with pharmaceuticals. Now, the endocrine disruptors are a different issue, but it's important to remember that there are multiple sources of endocrine disruptors in the environment. For one thing, every woman of childbearing age is putting endocrine disruptors into the environment. Every animal feedlot is putting endocrine disruptors into the environment. I actually get my water every morning from a well. We were worried last weekend in the Annapolis area that the snow was going to knock out our power, so I made sure that I had fresh water in the house, because when the power goes off, the well goes off. When I go into the District of Columbia to work, I'm drinking water that comes from the local river. So the concern about what is in the water is, in fact, a concern that we all share. But our companies have been looking at the effects of pharmaceuticals on organisms in the environment. They have been doing a series of studies. We have a database of thousands of peer-reviewed articles, and the consistent finding is that there is no risk to human health, and there is no identified risk to aquatic animals in the aquatic environment, particularly when prescription drugs are disposed of in the waste, the normal household trash. Now, we recommend that you put them in a sealed container. In fact, the containers that you get from the pharmacy are often very effective for that. We recommend putting something in there to make that unattractive to either animals or humans, like coffee grounds, kitty litter, water, and then putting it in the trash rather than running a separate take-back program. Somebody mentioned the U.S. Geological Survey. The major factors that the Geological Survey found in the surface water were DEET, think bug spray, sunscreen, caffeine, fertilizers, runoff from animal production facilities. In the Eastern Shore of Maryland, there are great concerns from the runoff from chicken factories. There are a number of compounds that have not actually been studied to look at their effects on humans, in contrast to prescription drugs. There's been discussion of diversion and potential abuse of prescription drugs. Yes, there are concerns with abuse of prescription drugs. We've been working with the DEA, with DARE, and a number of other community-based programs to try and educate parents, high school students, college students about the dangers of taking a prescription drug that has not been prescribed for you, or taking a drug for a use that it's not been prescribed for. But getting an unused medicine out of the medicine cabinet is not going to remove the medicine that I may be taking for my high blood pressure, that somebody may be taking for long-term pain. There are a number of instances where the medicine will be in the home because it is, in fact, being used, and the best approaches, we believe, are to educate everybody to the potential danger if you are misusing a prescription drug, and educating people about how efficiently to get rid of any drugs that they may not be using. There's one more point that I would like to make, and then I'll wrap up quickly, there are some medications that FDA does recommend be flushed down the toilet. Somebody said there are 26. I don't know the exact number. We've been working with the FDA to try and have them go back and review all of those medicines to make a clear scientific determination of whether they need to be flushed. In some instances, it's because of a concern with abuse of the drug because it has a narcotic effect. In a few instances, frankly, FDA doesn't recommend flushing, but they recommend a company-based return program because there are some medicines that women of childbearing age should not handle. One medicine in particular that somebody was talking about at a meeting last week that is essentially based on thalidomide. And those of you who are as old as I am may remember the thalidomide problems, infants born with deformed limbs, because thalidomide causes birth defects if women who are pregnant come in contact with it. There are maybe a dozen, two dozen medicines like that that people sorting the medicine at the local sheriff's office or at the waste disposal site should not be women of childbearing age because they shouldn't be touching those medications. So there are a number of complexities that are important to remember in trying to deal with waste at the household level. And for purposes of this, I'm distinguishing household waste from waste at healthcare facilities, which is an entirely different system. But let me wind up by saying that since 75% of all healthcare costs are for chronic conditions, and medicine is one of the ways that chronic conditions are treated, it's important that people take their medication as prescribed, that there be education about how to dispose of those few medicines that are not going to be used, but that the vast majority of what is in the environment in the infinitesimal quantities comes from actual human use. Thank you. Let me address any questions if there are any.
Thank you. Representative Bigham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Powell, thank you for coming in today. Did you say you were from D.C.?
Yes. I work in Washington. I live just outside of Annapolis in Maryland.
Quite the snowstorm this weekend, I understand. Did you fly in today?
Ms. Powell.
I flew in today, but I understand I'm not flying out tomorrow morning.
No. Just out of curiosity, did you fly in first class or coach?
Ms. Powell.
Today I flew on a coach ticket. I was bumped up to first class because I have spent so much time on airplanes lately. But we fly coach when we travel.
Okay, that's just what I was wondering. Just curious.
Okay, Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. Last spring, I was in an automobile accident, and after I took my first week of medicine, the doctor mm-hmm. switched me to a new one, and I read the label, and it said, this might make you dizzy. And I thought, oh my gosh, I'm chairing a conference committee. I'm not taking this medicine. So it still sits on my shelf, but I don't see on there my medicine that it says, as you are trying to educate me, wrap this up in this, dispose it in this way. I don't see that on the medicine. So I don't get, if you're advocating that, why don't you, if you really believe that, why isn't it on my medicine every time I get a prescription exactly what you want me to do with it?
Ms. Powell.
Mr. Chair, Representative, depending on how the medicine was packaged, it most likely came from the pharmacy. And the pharmaceutical manufacturers don't have any control over what pharmacies put on the label. FDA mandates certain things. The State Board of Pharmacy mandates additional things. We have been trying to work with pharmacies to encourage them to put either this or our bookmark or some other one of the materials that we provide in each package that they give to a customer to say this is what you should do with your medicine. In a few instances, when a product comes in a manufacturer's packaging, in what we call a unit of consumer use, it will say, if there is an FDA requirement that it be flushed, it will say flush. We are encouraging our member companies to put this kind of information in their unit of use packaging, but that actually, if it's in the packaging from the manufacturer, the FDA has to approve it first. And we've had some slow discussions with the FDA about that. We are working with them to encourage them to include that in the packaging.
Okay, Representative Wagenius.
Given the power of the companies, and I just got a list of these companies, it's hard for me to believe that if you really truly did believe that your method of disposal was the best one, that wouldn't be on every package, even though it comes through a pharmacist. I mean, you do sell them to the pharmacist. So it's a little, I just feel like a lot of walking away from responsibility here. That's the theme I'm getting, that we're not responsible, let somebody else do it. You know, people should be educated for cheese. Let somebody else do it. So it's very disconcerting when I know what's happening to our waters. And if you live in Washington, D.C., you're drinking Potomac River water, the fish in the Potomac River almost 100% have intersex problems.
Ms. Powell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wish I had as much confidence that the manufacturers could convince the FDA and the state boards of pharmacy to change their regulations. We work very closely with the FDA, but we work on a variety of issues. This is only one of them. And we've been trying to work with them on increasing the education of consumers, because we do think that it is our responsibility to both educate consumers that they should be taking their medicines unless the doctor has switched them, and if the doctor has switched, that there is an appropriate way to dispose of them. Unfortunately, although my members may be large companies and small companies as well, we don't have the ability to educate everybody about everything. We're doing the best we can, but education is a very difficult thing, particularly when you're dealing with consumers, and pharmaceuticals are a very, very small portion of what is actually found in the water and what is causing problems with the fish. We're not saying we're not there. We're saying we're only a small part, and we are trying to do our part in educating consumers in how to appropriately dispose of their medicines.
Okay, thanks. Thank you, Ms. Powell. And we have one more testifier left, so thank you for your testimony today. And again, tell me if I'm pronouncing this right, Mr. Rend Almondri. Oh, I'm sorry, miss. Sorry about that. Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Rend Almondri, and I'm here on behalf of the Consumer Healthcare Products Association. We represent the nation's leading over-the-counter medicine and nutritional supplement manufacturers. And you've heard a lot of the arguments today, so I'll be pretty brief. We oppose House File 1217 because consumer education is a more effective means of ensuring safe medicine disposal with minimal environmental impact. And I think we can all agree that more education is needed on many issues here. The program outlined in this legislation, we believe, is burdensome, unnecessary, and does nothing to protect the environment. First, we believe this bill will may burden counties and is overly broad. CHPA represents 70 companies that manufacture FDA-regulated products ranging from common pain relievers, antihistamines, and antacids, also medicated lip balm, toothpaste, other dental care products, sunscreen, shampoos. The list is quite extensive. As a result, counties may be required to collect and sort through hundreds of consumer products. And enforcement of this legislation could create a substantial administrative burden for the Pollution Control Agency. And we've heard concerns about red tape. We believe that the program outlined in this legislation creates an enormous amount of red tape. Also, as you've heard, consumers in Minnesota could also face increased health care costs, which, although unintentional, because this drug take-back program is very complex and requires significant financial resources. Collected medicines must be kept safe to prevent theft and diversion, which I know is a big concern. Then the medicines must be securely transported for disposal, and then finally incinerated in compliance with federal and state laws, and also making sure that each of these hundreds of products are each properly incinerated. Second, not only is the system cumbersome, it is unnecessary. There really is no simple model of collecting these products, and we've already heard of a way to properly dispose of these products. Proper disposal in household trash keeps medicines out of the water. It's more convenient for consumers than a drug take-back program, so consumers will be more likely to comply. And unlike the program outlined in this bill, these procedures also avoid the possibility of theft of medicines from mailboxes or collection bins and better protects consumer privacy. And finally, my last point, you've already heard that this bill will not protect water quality or the environment, and that most drugs and how most drugs get into the water, and how this bill won't do anything to take care of that. You've also heard how proper disposal in household trash is environmentally responsible, simple, and efficient. We support the smart disposal program you heard from Pharma. So again, just very briefly, we believe consumer education efforts that promote proper disposal of medicines and household trash, as you've heard described today, already provide the most effective means of keeping medicines out of the water, preventing theft and diversion, keeping them out of the hands of children. It's convenient and will not impose burdens on the counties or state. So that's it. I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Any questions at all? Representative McNamara.
Not this testifier, but Mr. Chair, I was wondering if we're going to be able to hear from the MPCA. I do see they're in the audience.
So would they want to testify quickly on this bill? What do we have? Okay, come on down. Yeah, are there any other questions for Ms. Almondri before she steps away? Okay, I don't see any, so thank you. And if you could state your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, my name is Tim Schirkenbach. I am the Deputy Commissioner of the PCA, and with me is Garth Hickel. He's somebody I'm sure a lot of you maybe have seen in the past or heard from. He's kind of one of our experts at the agency dealing with the whole concept of producer responsibility and product stewardship. What you're going to find here today, Mr. Chair, is we probably have not as many answers that people would like, because this is a complicated system. I think what you're struggling with is probably two issues. If something needs to be done, and then what should it be as far as looking at the cost and what it'll accomplish. As far as if, you also got a problem. We do have like the Household Hazardous Waste Program, and basically that says if you're telling people not to dispose of hazardous waste in the wrong way, then what we try to do is at least provide reasonable ways that they can do it. I think that's what this is doing. It's there. The problem is we don't have quite the same situation as you have with impaired waters or others where we actually have standards for water quality with regard to endocrine disruptors or some of these pharmaceutical chemicals. They don't exist yet. We know they're there. There's some evidence that there's problems, and we can have some of our people from the agency come here. But again, you don't have the standards. So that creates a little problem as far as where are you actually trying to get and how do you best get there. And secondly, like what we do with impaired waters, we don't have a lot of information where you go back up and try to say what are the sources. So when we did the TMDL on mercury, you've heard of that, at least we had some kind of a model as far as what was the overall outstate sources of mercury and what were the in-state sources of mercury and some reasonable way to figure out where they were coming from so you could allocate responsibility. I think that's what we're all struggling from here. You do have. You've heard testimony that's talked about the issue, how much it is coming from the agricultural use, how much is coming from the human use, and how much is coming from the fact that it does pass through all of us as we use these medications. So I think that's what we're trying to have a struggle with as we look at our responsibility under this to deal with the system. At least what we do see is right now a lot of it would go at least to the existing infrastructure. So it says you do have the household has this waste system. That's somewhat a model. You've heard people talking about how you could somewhat build from that model, at least relative to the public infrastructure. I think the one thing we're trying to say is we've also had people from the Minnesota Retailers Association, Buzz Anderson, others telling us that there's some interest in how we could have a reverse distribution system that would somewhat be run and assisted by the retailers. We do have a question, and actually it's come up today with regard to the controlled substance. That is an issue. You heard as far as the county example, where basically they deal with it by taking everything and then going through and sorting and trying to separate that out. As far as when you look at maybe a facility or a couple of facilities in a county, that sounds practical. You can look at it. As you scale up from that and look at systems that were much bigger, then you have the question of what are the additional issues you'd have to deal with. So that's what we don't have all the answers to that yet. And that's why I have Garth here. He can talk. When you're talking about product stewardship, we support, at some point he'll talk. When you're talking about product stewardship, I'd say we support the idea. It makes sense that you have broader responsibility for the products that we use in our society. What we know is, though, that each product has its own different unique elements to it as far as how much product are you talking about. Again, where is it coming from? How is it distributed and then used in the system? So where are the sources of generation? So laying the foundation, and now if Garth wants to talk about some additional issues relative, again, our basic framework we developed as a result of legislative request for dealing with product stewardship.
Okay, and we do have a couple of questions as well already, and we'd like to try to wrap things up here as soon as we can. So. But Representative McNamara did have a question.
Well, I've got a jillion of them. I'm wondering, I'm really troubled by the flushing in the toilet, and I know we're getting, it seems like it really matters what we're flushing and that, but is MPCA interested in working with folks? We need to change this rule that we have, telling nursing homes to open pills one at a time and dump them in the toilet. But I understand there's some federal regulation that requires some things to be dumped in the toilet. Are you interested in working so that it seems to make sense to quit flushing things down the toilet? I think that's only the first step, but I guess that's my first question.
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, yes. I mean, there are contradictions. There are contradictory rules and laws that we need to address. And the question is, what will it take to do that? Given that it does involve not only state agencies but some federal agencies. So that is a very complicated issue right now as far as first getting barriers out of the way. So even if we create voluntary systems, they really can work in a cost-effective manner.
Okay.
And a follow-up. I'm glad to hear that because I think that seems everybody was talking that. Didn't matter on what side of
the no-brainer.
What side of the issue you're on. Assistant Commissioner, my next question is, what's your thoughts? I mean, it seemed to me like Chisago County, it's working. It's working real well. They come down here and they want to bring, man, we got how many MPCA people here and lobbyists and all this. If the state gets their hands in this, it's going to be a mess. They're running it. It seems like in a decent way. It seems like it's a pilot already. Does that seem like it makes sense to you, a model like that, where the county's just taking care of it already? And I put the numbers to it. They got 45,000. That's what Representative Kalen told me. They have 45,000 people living in Chisago County. They're spending $5,000 a year. That's 600 grand a year. I'm sorry, but we'll spend that much on the bureaucracy we create above how many. He said a small employer in New Hope, 400 employees. I'm sorry, that's a huge employer today. The last thing we need to do is be chasing more of them away, create more bureaucracy for the government to be running it. What's your thoughts on that program in Chisago County?
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara. No, I mean, we've worked, the agency has worked with Chisago County and other counties to try to help look at their requests and making sure that the barriers, what we can do about those barriers. So, yeah, that program works. I think the issue is, as I said, not only if something needs to be done like that, it's what needs to be done as you start to take that, scale it up to state level. Then you're talking about a factor of 100 or something beyond that. And then you say, what type of system do you really need? How can you keep it simple so it provides the basic outcome, which is if citizens are trying to do the right thing and not flush it, then do you make it convenient and readily accessible to them to do that? So, yes, we're fully in. Now the question is, what type of system is needed? And how do you do it so it doesn't create more administrative costs than you're actually spending on costs of really disposing, collecting and disposing of the material itself?
And we have two more questions, and I think we'll cut it off after that. First, Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just in response to the previous question, I believe, Representative McNamara, this indeed is that simple, that the county can do this. And I agree. I kind of crunched some numbers myself, and it looks like this is a doable thing, and why don't we have the county options here? So we just need some funding to pay for it, and perhaps the pharmaceutical companies could pay for that. But my question specifically, Mr. Schirkenbach, just in regard to, you spoke that we don't have standards for some of these chemicals that we're trying to analyze, and do we even have analytical methods? Do the companies that produce these chemicals give us analytical methods for the analytes and the metabolites so that we can even develop standards to do the analytical chemistry? Or are we just at a blank wall here?
Mr. Chair and Representative Purcell, we'd have to get some of the people that work more in that area. But yeah, I think we do. I think what's hard about this is, again, the categories that overlap. Pharmaceuticals, healthcare products, endocrine disruptors. And it's hard to get a handle on which specific thing we're talking about. Certainly as far as pharmaceuticals, if I'm not wrong, I think they talk about, 18 active different ingredients that they look as kind of pharmaceutical ingredients. And I think in a lot of them, you do have to contest them. Some of them, I think, are more difficult to deal with. When I was talking about standards, it's just the studies that need to be done to really say, what is the impact? Again, they're there. We know and understand that there's some things that are happening out there that are not good. But in order to attribute it to a specific element, that's what becomes a problem on dealing with it.
Mr. Chair, just a quick follow-up, and I'll quit. That's the issue that as I understand it, is there's no requirement when a chemical is produced in pharmaceutical chemical that there be a method attached with that so that you as an enforcement agency can do the analytical chemistry to go measure in the environment, or is that required? I just clarify that for me.
No, it isn't. I mean, Mr. Chair and Representative Purcell, no, if you remember the PFC issue that we've been dealing with 3M, I mean, that was one that, no, there was a big issue at first on how do you develop, because there's so many different telomeres or chain lengths of carbon we were dealing with. So it became very complicated to figure out how you came up with those. And under TSCA, the Toxic Substance Control Act, as they first use a specific chemical or something, and now I think there's about 100,000 registered, that isn't necessarily one of the requirements I'm dealing with.
Thank you.
As far as I know.
Okay. And Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Assistant Commissioner, I think all of us will agree with the stewardship notions of, it doesn't make sense to flush things down the toilet that have different types of chemicals in them. But What evidence do we have? And it sounds I'm kind of analytical, like Representative Purcell, but what it sounds like, I mean, one testifier earlier was talking about parts per trillion. I may have chemicals on my hands that we're talking about today, and I've never taken any of them just because of those very minute measurements that we're able to do in science today. But do we have definitive evidence that there's a problem to begin with? It sounds like we don't have the ability or the process in place to make these measurements at this point. Do we know there's a problem?
Mr. Chair and Representative, when you say a problem, are there problems out there such as endocrine disruptors and some things that are happening in waters in this country that are we don't like, it's not good, and we can't fully explain? The trouble is trying to attribute that to a specific component or chemical is what is the problem on dealing with that. That takes time. Our biggest dilemma we all have is our ability to detect things has gone way, way down. Again, when I started, it was all about parts per million. Now we're dealing with parts per quadrillion and beyond that, where we can detect. As Dr. Foley on our citizens board said, the thing we haven't kept up with is how do we respond to the so what question. So again, for something like this, though, you say, at least like hazardous waste, we know basically that pharmaceuticals will pass through wastewater treatment. We do know we're seeing them in wastewater public treatment system discharges. We are seeing it in the waters of the state, and yes, there's signs that that's not good. The trouble is, again, going back and attributing that to a specific component of the overall pharmaceutical stream. Like I said with TMDLs, we don't have standards. So if we have a PODW where we do detect pharmaceuticals, we don't have any limit. We don't set any standard for that because we don't have any information upon which to set that standard.
And one last question, Representative Thiessen.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So if people were to dispose of these in the typical waste stream in the trash in the bottles that it came in, what do you have an impression of, is that going to cause a problem?
Mr. Schirkenbach?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative, right now what we do say in our fact sheets is, yeah, we've moved and said, and working with wastewater treatment plants, that no, we do not like to see them flushed down. We'd rather do is have them, and I think some people talked about that. Take the drug, you mix it with coffee grounds or some other thing, put it so at least it's not evident that that's a specific drug in your stream, so somebody's going through your trash. And then the idea that it does go to landfill. And yeah, there's questions about the leachate, whether you discharge it to POTWs. Landfills in this state, I think now we have a total of 26 active landfills. They really don't discharge their leachate into POTWs. What they do is often recirculate, keep it coming back. It's part of a new idea of having more water, so it helps break down the solid waste over a shorter period of time.
So, Mr. Chair, just kind of yes, no. So if you were to do that program, you don't see an environmental concern if people have disposal in the landfills, if it's in with the coffee grounds and in the plastic bottle or whatever.
Right now we see that as the preferable method of dealing with it. As far as, again, there's other legislation, we're just going to be probably in front of this committee or others talking about this report we're doing on the new siting proposal. So we're trying to figure out and that's basically saying maybe engineering alone isn't enough to make sure that there's no risk to the groundwater, but we're taking a look at that. Right now, it's preferable that you put it in your solid waste stream, and therefore it either goes into a permitted landfill with appropriate lining, or it goes into a waste energy burner.
And thank you. And Mr. Hickel, did you have anything you want to say?
Well, Mr. Chair, I will spare the committee any kind of broader discussion about product stewardship, but I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have. The agency has been looking at the legislative proposals that are under consideration in the states of Maine and Washington, as well as British Columbia's program that was referenced earlier, and will certainly be going through this in more detail, trying to be able to answer some of the questions that have been identified.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hickel. And Representative Gardner, would you like to...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know we'd like to come to a conclusion. I need to correct a few factual errors. and a few things that were said that they weren't meant to be, but they have misled people, and based on what I've heard, the Food and Drug Administration recommends flushing for opiates. These are the addictive drugs, but they don't require it. And the DEA has guidance, but not a requirement that drugs be flushed down the toilet. New York State and Illinois have banned flushing without any conflict with federal law. The folks in the nursing homes, I have to say this, Mr. Chair, I've been working on this for a year, and I've been trying to get somebody who actually is a bona fide employee of the nursing homes groups to talk to me, and somebody came in to me to talk this afternoon for the first time, and there were some things about the Department of Health requiring flushing. This is all true. The health department showed me the rules, and statutes supersede rules, and we have in the bill the no flush requirement. And there was something about hospitals. Hospitals are not exempted from the no flush. And when talking about meeting with stakeholders after session, that's about source reduction strategies. That isn't about taking waste back. On the issue of mail back, yes, Maine had a very expensive mail back program. And I've talked to the folks in Maine, and they said it was a nightmare to give everybody a mail back envelope. It is expensive. It's the most expensive way to deal with it. It's an option if one of the producers wants to try it. But that would not be a preferred method for keeping down cost. Dr. Moore said that EPA is not studying the issue of pharmaceuticals. In fact, Lisa Jackson, the administrator of EPA, is interested in seeing if we should regulate pharmaceuticals in drinking water. And if we do that, look out, because we're talking about several billion dollars in wastewater treatment upgrades throughout Minnesota. So this kind of program is actually a lot cheaper to keep it below a certain level. And the reverse distribution is about homogeneous material. One manufacturer's own product that's being taken back through a secure channel. The material that would be dealt with in this program is heterogeneous. It's all kind of mixed up. And so it's a different kind of waste stream. Paddock Industries said that they're concerned about mailback envelopes with a pill or two in it. Perhaps there was an inference from previous versions of this bill that manufacturers would be required to take back their own product. That is actually not the case. Having a background in recycling, I know that volume is key to scaling up, getting as much volume as you can to help cut per unit cost so that you reduce costs overall. There's probably a few other things, but I'll just leave it there that probably won't impact the outcome, but we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions? Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate Representative Gardner's work on this. This is definitely going way too far, too quick, and I would ask for a roll call when we have the roll.
Okay. Roll call has been requested. Any other questions? And I think I lost my mic.
Sorry.
Understand there is an oral amendment, Representative Junkie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the bill. I do have an amendment. As I listen to the testimony, I think it's all interesting, but it seems to me that this is a good spot, the Environment Committee, but I heard public safety concerns. I don't know if it's going to public safety. I heard all sorts of human service concerns. I don't know if Representative Thiessen and Huntley on the costs. You know, there's fiscal aspects as well as policy. But one place I don't think it should go is the Agriculture Committee, and I don't think Representative Gardner wants it to come there, and so I'd like to offer an oral amendment to remove those pieces of it, because frankly, the pharmaceuticals used in agriculture really don't apply to the problems you're talking about either. We're not in a sewer system. 99.99% of the farms are not in sewer systems, and they're not the pharma parties that public safety talked about, to my knowledge. You know, the cow pills and other things aren't being sought out by teenagers to party with. So I think there's, I don't want to get it over to my committee, and I think, you know, I don't think you want it there either. So, Mr. Chair, line 1.22, delete or other animals. Line 1.24, delete or other animals, or, and then on line 3.4, delete pets or both. And I think that takes out all reference to animals and in the definitions, and which would then preclude it from ever being talked about at this point in time with veterinarian medicines and farm and producer type things that we have out there, and I wouldn't care to see it in my committee then.
Mr. Chair, I would accept that as a friendly amendment.
Okay. Representative Gardner accepts it as a friendly amendment. Okay. Everybody understand the amendment, or do they need it repeated? Okay. All those in favor of the oral amendment offered by Representative Junkie signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Representative Gardner, did you have any final comments?
I didn't have. We should get out of here, Mr. Chair.
Sure. Okay. Seeing any other questions? Seeing none, Representative Gardner renews his motion that the House File 1217, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Health Care and Human Services Policy. And a roll call has been requested. Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Eakin?
Yes.
Representative Anderson?
No.
Representative Bigham?
Yes.
Representative Dill?
No.
Representative Drukowski?
No.
Representative Falk?
Yes.
Representative Gardner?
Yes.
Representative Hackbarth? Representative Hansen?
Yes.
Representative Junkie?
No.
Representative Loon?
No.
Representative McNamara?
No.
Representative Purcell?
Yes.
Representative Saylor?
Yes.
Representative Sterner?
Yes.
Representative Thiessen?
I pass.
Representative Wagenius?
Yes.
Representative Cornish?
There being 9 ayes and 6 nays, the motion does prevail and the bill is passed. And with that, I do want to just introduce very quickly Reed Anderson and Luke Ferguson. If you want to wave to the crowd, we'll be paging for our committee this year. So thank you for putting in a long night with us tonight. And this next Thursday, we will be doing a hearing on the flood issue in the Red River Valley. We'll be hearing from the Army Corps of Engineers and the Red River Basin Commission doing a presentation. Very important hearing, so look forward to seeing you there. Thanks. Meeting adjourned.